So when I was in college, one of the professors I had was Charles Hunting. And we figured out afterwards, playful intimidation, he would come into the classroom with a huge stack of books under his arm. And he'd set them down on the lectern, and then he'd give his whole lecture and never open one of them. They were just there to intimidate people. And this morning, Nancy was talking about her desire to really take a lot of notes and really come and listen to, you know, a good old-fashioned church service. So I thought I'd bring these up for Nancy. Oh, well, that's not going to be the case today. Well, this is going to be the last in a group of messages that's gotten kind of scattered over the whole summer that dealt with the law, the prophets, and the writings. And so I'll just give you a brief summary of some of the things that we talked about to lead up to what we're going to talk about today, because today we're going to talk about the writings. And where this all was headed was that Jesus makes it very clear when he talks to the specifically to the Pharisees that the more important matters of the law were justice, mercy, and faith. And certainly at the time that Jesus walked the earth, the scriptures that the Jews had at the time were what we would understand to be the law and the prophets. If you study the history of the canonization of the Bible, and particularly the Jewish scriptures, the writings even didn't become a part of the canon until somewhere between the 2nd and the 9th century after Christ. They certainly had them as part of, you know, their literature, but they really didn't become part of what we would understand to be the Old Testament until somewhere between 200 and 900 years after Jesus' death. There is obviously one reference in the New Testament where Jesus talks about in Luke about the law, the prophets, and the Psalms. But most of the references in the New Testament simply deal with the law and the prophets. But there is a parallel between what Jesus talked about to the Pharisees about the weightier matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faith, and those three divisions of the law, the prophets, and the writings. And in the past messages, I pointed out that, you know, the law, the five books of Moses, are essentially about justice. And it's about God teaching his children about what is right and wrong. And certainly when you think about it in terms of raising children or watching your children raise your grandchildren, that's the way we teach kids. The first thing that we teach them is what is right and wrong, and what is good to do and what is not good to do. And because no child is perfect, and they make mistakes, the mistake is an opportunity to show mercy. You still understand that there is the need for understanding justice and knowing what right and wrong is, but since none of us are perfect and we're all going to make a mistake, mercy is an opportunity to teach, because now you have a correction that takes place, and now you can start over and learn to practice. And that is really what the Old Testament is about. We see in the law the teaching of justice, and we see in the prophets God's mercy to the people, and how every time they would make a mistake, they would get the opportunity to learn again the next time. And that continues throughout the books of the prophets, the former prophets and the latter prophets. We see that cycle over and over again. And that's certainly the cycle that we have with our children. But what that leaves is the writings. That if the law is justice and the prophets are mercy, what Jesus explained to the Pharisees was faith. And if the analogy holds, then the writings are about faith. And certainly, if the analogy holds to an extension, and the law and the prophets were what testified of Jesus, because that's what he said, you know, when he taught the people that he was walking down the road with after the resurrection, he said he explained to them all of the things in the law and the prophets that talked about him. And the writings, for the most part, don't talk about Jesus. You know, the writings of that occurred even almost after Jesus' lifetime, in the sense that they became part of the canon and the scripture. So the law and the prophets led up to, they pointed to, they were the schoolmaster that brought, you know, pointed to Jesus, and they bring us to Jesus. And then when we think about our development and we have the opportunity for participating with Jesus in this life, and we have him dwelling in us and us dwelling in him, that becomes the practice of the faith. That becomes the practice of our walk with faith. And in fact, every week when we go through the prayer requests and the testimonies, we basically hear, and we have an opportunity to participate, if nothing more than in prayer, we hear about other people's walk in that faith at one level or another. And certainly that walk really begins with the presence of Jesus in our lives. And so the law and the prophets led up to Jesus, they prophesied about Jesus, they lead us to Jesus, and once he is a part of our faith, then it's that walk of faith that we can then begin to participate in, because we've had the teachings of the law and the justice, and we've had the mercy that has helped guide us to make choices, the right choices, because God even told Israel, look, I place before you life and death. Choose life. You know, that's what God is interested in us deciding. He wants us to decide to choose life, because that's the stronger choice to make. When we choose, rather than being made to do something, when we choose to do something, that becomes a much stronger choice, and it's something that becomes exhibited then in our lives. We spend a lot of time, unfortunately, hearing the news, and in the news of late, you know, we hear about mass shootings. And if you spend any time looking into those things in detail, you find out that there is a lot of confusion related to the reporting. There's a lot of misinformation, because there's always an agenda from one side or the other about what is going on. And so, you know, there are people that are making claims that, you know, well, the problem, the reason we have things like mass shootings is because, you know, we have all these mental disorders that we're not taking care of. Or we're giving all these kids medication that they shouldn't be having. Or they're spending way too much time playing video games. Or there are too many guns loose in the population. Or it's a single parent household. Or there's bullying in the school. And there's all of these reasons that are put out there, many of them simply because of an agenda. And so then you get all of these people that say, well, this is what we need to do to stop this. We need to take the guns away, or we need to create red flag laws, or we need to put more guns out in the population so people can protect themselves, or we need to stop medicating the kids, or we need to give them more medication so that we can keep control of them. Or we need to put God back in the schools. And none of those things are the solution, including putting God back in the schools. Because we have to understand, God does not make us do anything. What God teaches is, this is right and wrong, and when you make the wrong choice, I have provided a means called mercy that allows you to learn from your mistakes, and once you've learned from your mistakes, the desire is to then choose life and make this walk in faith, choosing the correct path to take as you're being led by the Holy Spirit. And so, you know, even with situations like mass shootings or in schools, putting God there simply isn't the solution, because God's not going to force them to do things or not do things. He's going to present them with situations where they can then make the choice to learn to walk by faith. And that's really the story of the writings. When you think of the writings and what the writings are intending to teach and trying to portray, it is a walk of faith. And certainly it only happens once there is Jesus and the Spirit of God in the lives of those who, at least we read about in the writings, participated with that, but certainly in our lives as well. Because it is that faith then that comes is able to come as a result of God dwelling in us and understanding right and wrong and being corrected to a point and then making the choice to choose life. And every walk in faith is different. All of the people that we prayed for here today or that we heard about in the testimonies and all of us in here has a very different walk. It's not the same. The family members are different. The instances that occur in our life are different regarding events or sicknesses or, you know, whatever happens, our genetic makeup, it's all different. And as a result, everybody's walk is a little different. And that's what we also see in the writings. We see everybody's walk a little bit differently. And yet, there are enough of them compiled in the writings that we can learn to understand and glean what God is trying to do with all of those writings. We can look at all of their various books, and we'll just go through and quickly look at some examples of what those things are that God is trying to show us regarding the walks that those people have. So let's do that. Let's take the Bible and go through and look at some of these. I am using this because it has, quote unquote, the inspired order of the writings. This has them in order of, you know, the way the Jews maintain the scriptures, the law and the prophets and the writings. And the writings are all grouped together in, you know, what they would identify as the inspired order. And so let's just leaf through some of these quick and take a look at some of the things that are talked about, just some highlights from some of the writings that Jesus is trying to portray as his inspiration of the Old Testament, and these things that were, you know, given to David and Solomon and the historians that recorded these events, just to simply show us, look, even before Jesus walked the earth, there were these people that were inspired in their walk of faith to make a choice to choose life. So turn to Psalms chapter 1. Obviously, the book of Psalms is the first book of the writings. And in Psalms 1, verse 1, it says, "Happy is the man who has not followed the counsel of the wicked, or taken the path of sinners, or joined the company of the insolent. Rather, the teaching of the Lord is his delight, and he studies the teaching day and night. He is like a tree planted beside the streams of water, which yields its fruit in season, whose foliage never fades, and whatever it produces thrives. Not so the wicked. Rather, they are like chaff that the wind blows away. Therefore, the wicked will not survive judgment, nor will the sinners in the assembly of the righteous. For the Lord cherishes the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked is doomed." And so right from the very start, the writings makes it clear about the consequences of your choice. If you choose life or you choose death, and how that involves your relationship with God. If you turn over to Proverbs chapter 1, Proverbs 1 and verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, "For learning wisdom and discipline, for understanding words of discernment, for acquiring the discipline for success, righteousness, justice, and equity, for endowing the simple with shrewdness, for the young with knowledge and foresight, the wise man hearing them will gain more wisdom. The discerning man will learn to be adroit. For understanding proverb and epigram, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and discipline. My son, heed the discipline of your father and do not forsake the instruction of your mother." And so it starts out here with the encouragement of, you know, pay attention to what's good and what's right, and then make a choice accordingly. Please make a choice accordingly. And so, you know, Proverbs is geared for that. It's intended to help instruct. We won't read the book of Job, but certainly Job is the story of a man's personal relationship with his friends and his God. That's what it's about. And it's his walk. You know, and there are certainly things in the story of Job that everybody that's on this planet have experienced, and very few people on this experience on this planet have experienced everything in their life that Job experienced. You know, the loss of family, the loss of wealth, you know, the sickness, the disease, you know. Fortunately for us, it tends to get scattered around a little bit. Job was personally attacked by Satan, and all of that that occurred, and certainly in all of those trials, and his faith was tested, his choice was to choose life. And that was his walk in the faith of God. The next book is the Song of Songs, or the Song of Solomon. And certainly, you know, the Song of Solomon is a book about love and romance and eroticism. It's intimacy in marriage. And certainly, that is a love that's certainly not the love of a father for a child. It's a much more mature, intimate love. And you would think, well, why is that in there? Well, it's in there because it's that very mature, intimate love that we should be having in our relationship with God. It's interesting that the Ashkenazi Jews read the Song of Solomon at Passover, which would seem rather odd. But when you think about, you know, Passover is a very intimate service, that book is about intimacy. The Sephardic Jews read it every Friday evening at the opening of Sabbath. And certainly, you know, that makes sense as well, because, you know, you are taking that time out on a weekly basis to participate in an intimate relationship with God. And that makes sense. The book of Ruth is the story of Ruth's faith. And, you know, we tend to read that, at least I've read it, quite often on Pentecost, and that's traditionally when it's read in the Jewish synagogues, because it is not only about her open-mindedness and her faith and her willingness to follow, you know, her mother-in-law's example and her mother-in-law's faith, but also, and turn to Ruth chapter 4, because the result of her walk in faith ultimately leads to her redemption. And that's part of the story. In Ruth chapter 4 and verse 13, it says, so Boaz married Ruth, and if you remember the story, you know, she in a sense courted Boaz, you know, by sleeping at his feet and participating in the, you know, in the harvest in the field. She became his wife, and he cohabited with her, and the Lord let her conceive, and she bore a son. And the woman said to Naomi, blessed be the Lord who has not withheld a redeemer from you today. May his name be perpetuated in Israel. He will renew your life and sustain your old age, for he is born of your daughter-in-law, who loves you and is better to you than seven sons. Naomi took the child and held it to her bosom, and she became its foster mother, and the women neighbors gave him a name, saying, a son is born to Naomi, and they named him Obed, and he is the father of Jesse, the father of David. And so certainly was not only Ruth and her mother-in-law, Naomi, redeemed just within the structure of the Israelite nation, but certainly through David and then his descendants, ultimately Jesus Christ, all of mankind was redeemed because, you know, he was an ancestor of Jesus. The book of Lamentations is a book that is full of lament. I mean, that's where the name comes from. And we all have reasons and occasions to lament in our life. It simply happens. You know, we have all kinds of experiences that are personal, that are family, that are related to friends, that result in our need to lament. And certainly this is no different. The book of Lamentations is the lament for the nation, but the nation was God's child. And certainly there is that example that is part of life. The book of Ecclesiastes. Turn over to chapter 12 of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is a very interesting book because it can be pretty cynical. But there are times in life where cynicism happens. Good or bad, it happens. And there are reasons to become cynical. And certainly, you know, I think Solomon probably had a lot of those reasons. And he embodied it in the book. In chapter 12, verse 2, or verse 1, he says, so appreciate your vigor in the days of your youth, before those days of sorrow come and those years arrive of which you will say, I have no pleasure in them. Before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars grow dark and the clouds come back again after the rain. It's pretty dark, you know? One of the guys that I used to work with would say, you know, it was something like, you know, life is tough and then you die. When the guards of the house become shaky and the men of valor are bent and the maids that grind grow few or idle, and the ladies that peer through the window grow dim, and the doors to the street are shut, with the noise of the handmill growing fainter, and the song of the bird is growing feebler, and all the strains of the music dying down, when one is afraid of heights, and there is terror on the road, for the almond tree may blossom, and the grasshopper be burdened, and the caper bush may bud again, but a man sets out for his eternal abode, with mourners all around in the street, before the silver cord snaps and the golden bowl crashes. The jar is shattered at the spring, and the jug is smashed at the cistern, and the dust turns to the ground as it was, and the life breath returns to God, who bestowed it. Utter futility, says Koheleth. All is futile. That paints a pretty dark picture. A further word, because Koheleth was a sage, he continued to instruct the people. He listened to and tested the soundness of many maxims. Koheleth sought to discover useful sayings and recorded generally truthful sayings. The sayings of the wise are like goads, like nails fixed in protruding sticks. They are given by one shepherd. A further word, against them, my son, be warned. The making of many books is without limit, and much study is the wearying of the flesh. The sum of the matter, when it is all said and done, revere God and observe his commandments. For this applies to all mankind, that God will call every creature into account for everything unknown, be it good or bad. And so Solomon was able to take, you know, a pretty cynical outlook on life there at the end and compile it in the book of Ecclesiastes, because that was a part and is a part of our walk of faith. And here is a different side that's presented. The book of Esther is another example of a walk of faith. And the book of Esther is kind of interesting from a historical perspective, because I pointed out earlier on in one of the messages that of all of the books of the Old Testament that were found in the Dead Sea Scrolls, the book of Esther is not there. And so, you know, it didn't become part of the Jewish canon until much later. But it certainly is representative of a walk of faith. In Esther chapter 4 and verse 12, when Mordecai was told that Esther had said what Esther had said, Mordecai had this message delivered to Esther. Do not imagine that you, of all the Jews, will escape with your life by being in the king's palace. On the contrary, if you keep silent in this crisis, relief and deliverance will come to the Jews. Relief and deliverance will come to the Jews from another quarter, while you and your father's house will perish. And who knows, perhaps you have attained to royal position for just such a crisis. Then Esther sent back this answer to Mordecai. Go, assemble all the Jews who live in Shushan and fast on my behalf. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day, and I and my maidens will observe the same fast. Then I shall go to the king, though it is contrary to the law, and if I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went about the city and did just as Esther had commanded him. You know, there are times in life when we are presented with the opportunity to make a choice that may cost us our life. And certainly, you know, the story of Esther is a story of not only faith, but responsibility for her position. And in the face of the threat of death, her integrity and her honesty, and the fact that she just didn't cut and run. And, you know, we're all faced with that at times. And certainly, you know, the book of Esther is her walk of faith that, you know, hopefully not many of us, but some of us are going to have to face. Daniel is certainly a story of faith. Daniel is another interesting one when it comes to the writings. In earlier canonization, the book of Daniel was not a part of the writings. It was considered a part of the books of the prophets. And I think even in the Dead Sea Scrolls, it's in the books of the prophets. But when the Masoretes put the Masoretic text together in the 9th century AD, they placed, for whatever reason, the book of Daniel in the writings. And certainly the book of Daniel is not only the story of faith, but it's the story of a witness as a result of that faith. You know, it's not only Daniel, but it's the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and their witness of that faith. And so, you know, in part, that walk of faith involves a witness, and they participated in that. The books of Ezra and Nehemiah in the Jewish canon are really a single book. They are the walk of faith that involves not only repentance, because nationally the Jews repented, and as a result of that, they were allowed to return. They were restored to their kingdom. They were, in a sense, redeemed. They rediscovered their religious heritage, and there was that revival that occurred. And that is many times the story of our walk of faith, that we have these ups and downs in our life and that we experience all of those things. The books of Chronicles, 1st and 2nd Chronicles, again, you know, in the Jewish canon is one book. And it is really the history and the experience of the nation of Israel from, you know, the genealogies at the very beginning that essentially outline the fact that they are the descendant of God. You know, God formed them through Adam, and they are the descendant of the image of God. And then it is the story of their learning to understand what justice was, God's mercy, and then their walk. And the book of Chronicles goes from the beginning at creation all the way up to the time of Ezra and Nehemiah. And it's that story of the establishment and the restoration of that physical kingdom with all of those spiritual lessons that go with it. Jesus described the criteria for entering the kingdom in Matthew 25. And certainly, you know, that criteria has to do with us having a caring heart, a heart that has the law written on it. And, you know, that law is love. And it's the love of God that not only teaches the justice, it teaches right and wrong early in life. It's also that love that expresses the mercy then that allows us to, after repeated mistakes, repent and then learn the better way to live and choose life. The point of Matthew 23, when Jesus is talking to the Pharisees, is that when he says they miss the weightier matters of the law, he is, and obviously, you know, he makes the statement there, that when you miss the weightier matters of the law, you are shutting the kingdom in people's faces because you're not allowing them to learn justice, mercy, and faith, the justice which leads to mercy and the mercy which makes it possible then to walk in faith. Because that's why we're here. We're here to take that walk. You're all familiar with Micah 6:8. You know, what is it that God requires? You know, to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly. Now, you know, it's interesting when you see that translated into English, because it says to love. To love in the English language is the infinitive of the verb love. And it just seems interesting to me that the term that we use for the basic verb of the language is called an infinitive. And the infinitive, I'm sure, is used because it embodies all the tenses of the word. The past tense, the present tense, and the future tense. And so in Micah 6:8, when we think about to do justly, is to do justice in the past, in the present, and in the future. You know, to love mercy in the past, in the present, and the future. And to walk humbly. That's the walk of faith. And we do it in the past, and we do it in the present, and we do it in the future. And so that's what the writings are. The writings are simply a record of people that had a walk of faith and is simply there for our inspiration and to see what we can gather from that and how others participated in that walk and how we can participate in that walk. And so that's what Jesus is talking about when he talks about, you know, justice, mercy, and faith. He is simply tying all that together in the same string that was all premised by how the Old Testament was laid out, that talked about his coming, that talked about his mercy and his sacrifice, and the whole purpose for that was so that we can walk in faith. That's all I have. Any thoughts or comments? Carol.
Walk differently. Oh, it was interesting because, you know, some mistakes we make, you only get to make them once.
Right.
And you're done. You're right. Dead because that mistake was so huge. But that, Jesus Christ fixed that because he destroyed death. He came in and he destroyed death from the inside out, just like Tommy Lee Jones going down the gullet of that big bug in Men in Black and blew it up from the inside, because he went down into Hades and he destroyed death. So even those stupid things we do that finish us physically, there's still mercy and an opportunity for walking in faith after that because of Christ. That's awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you think about that even in terms of the resurrection. Even that dumb guy that picks up sticks on the Sabbath out in the desert and got stoned for it, he's going to get an opportunity to do it again. Dennis.
I don't disagree with anything you said, except there's one statement you made I want to make sure I understood. You said Christ was not mentioned in the writings. Did you say that, or did I?
Well, certainly in Psalms he is.
Well, right, because that's what I was.
Right,
three
but
of
I
the
mean,
my
point was is that when he talks about all of the scripture that pointed to him, he makes and he does say the Psalms in Luke. He says the law, the prophets, and the Psalms. That's the only reference to anything in the writings.
That was what right. I just wanted yes. to make sure, because three of the fundamental prophecies about Christ
are in the Psalms.
In the Psalms. Yeah. The one of them is, the Lord said unto my Lord.
Right.
That's when he asked the question, how can Christ be David's son if David was worshiping Christ? The other one was, he cast lots for his clothes. And the other one was, I thirst. You know.
Right.
So, good. Just wanted to be clear.
Thank you. Any others? Okay.